hello everyone, and welcome back to another incredible episode of Broad What Podcast. Today's organization that we would love for you to do some research and check out is called the Native Women's Association of Canada. NWAC is a national Indigenous organization who represents the political voice of Indigenous women, girls, and gender diverse people in Canada, inclusive of First Nations on and off reserve, status and non-status, disenfranchised, Métis, and Inuit. NWAC was founded on the collective goal to enhance, promote, and foster the social, economic, cultural, and political well-being of Indigenous women within their respective communities and Canada societies. Their website is at www.nwac.ca, and I really recommend you checking this amazing organization out. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Broad What Podcast. Everyone knows it's your weekly insight into the heads and hearts of artists in the Lower Mainland and beyond. And we are continuing the trend of bringing back people from season one, and I had the lovely conversation with Jill Raymond, an incredible performer in town. Jill's been featured a few times on Broad What, and we finally had the chance to bring her back for another episode, especially featuring in this new season 2 format where we focus on mental health and where we are as performers, especially right now. And Jill was actually the first in-person interview I had in a really long time, so I was really glad that she came in to speak with me. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and we will see you next week for a very, very special episode. Bye, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm so good. It's good to see you again.
It's so nice to see you. Wow. Being in another person's house again.
Wild. Yeah. We were just saying off the air, I am so thrilled to have you back on the show, but also thrilled that you're my first guest back, because I feel like we have really good banter. We're really fun together. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy talking to you. And I felt like I was my first time back would be like a little nervous. So I was like, Jill's got to be my girl. She's got to be my person.
Well, that's so nice. I felt nervous about coming back because I was thinking about the last time I was here and just how different, everything's different now, but like how different even I, like where I was at that point, like that was what, it was 3 years ago or something?
Three, four, yeah, a while ago.
Yeah.
2017.
Yeah. And I was like, man, like it's so... Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, for the listeners who didn't tune in to the inaugural season one, how dare you first. But why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself, who you are, your name, where you're from, stuff like that. Just like very like rudimentary, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, cool. My name is Jill Raymond. I am a British Canadian actress, originally born in Newcastle upon Tyne in England. And my dad is Canadian. That's how I have dual citizenship. And I moved to Canada coming up for eight years ago. And yeah, I'm a performer, but actually I'm getting more predominantly to be like a producer and writer as well now. And I also teach acting and musical theater for children and do some PR, social media, content marketing, that kind of jazz as well. You know, as most performers, many strings to a bow and kind of figuring that stuff out.
So do you have a label for yourself? Do you say you're an artist? Do you say you're a content creator? Like, what's your title for yourself?
I would say I'm an artist, which is, it's interesting because I've only really truly felt like an artist since I started making my own work and doing also the producing side of things. Like, it's interesting. When that came to me, I was like, oh, that sounds crap, because it like really belittles people that are actors, like, and I'm an actor, that's what I do, like, because that is also an artist. But for me, a penny kind of dropped for me when I felt like I was really putting more of like my soul into also doing the writing side and the creating side of things. And maybe that also just says something about how I see myself as an actor and how I see myself more in this role of producing and writing as well, which is why I think I'm kind of gravitating more in that direction at this point. Like, the writing stuff certainly has been like a real eye opener for me. Yeah.
And you said you're from Newcastle?
Newcastle, aye. A Geordie. I'm a proper Geordie, although I don't have a Geordie accent.
Oh, okay. Amazing. I can't do any accents. People, if you heard my attempt at doing a British accent, you would.
Do it. No. Come on, let's go.
No. it's really bad. I can't believe I'm going to do this. I'll cut this out if I hate it. But I'm British, and I like to eat crumpets, and
it's really bad. It's not the worst I've heard.
Okay, I'll take it.
I've heard worse at the arts club, to be honest.
Stop. I saw that noise.
And like, you missed the tease out. That was good. British. That glottal stop there, yeah. That was pretty good.
I'll have crumpets. To come to you for coaching.
Absolutely.
Where is that? Where is that around?
It's in the northeast.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's about an hour away from Scotland. About as far north as you can get.
Okay, sure.
If anyone's still wondering, it's like where, like Jon Snow-ish, like the more north you get, like Ygritte.
Okay.
I think Ygritte had a Geordie accent, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Or around that area. Some Game of Thrones... Someone is going to be like, no, she wasn't. How dare you?
Cancelled. Yeah. Cancelled jail. So what are your like art influences from home? Could you come from an artistic family?
Yeah. Like my mum is visually an artist. And my stepmom as well. I grew up with two mums. Super fun fact. And they are both very, very arty. So yeah, they were both teachers. They're both retired now, which is great. But they came from like community art backgrounds, both of them. That's how they met. And they're both incredible at that. Like my mum is very good at like drawing, sketching, that kind of stuff. Heather, my stepmom had an exhibit in a gallery a few years ago. 'Cause she started to dabble in, collage.
Okay, cool.
But like really interesting, like intricate stuff to do with like perspective, and it was really great. So performing artist wise, my grandma on my mum's side, actually my grandma on my dad's side apparently was an amazing singer, but my grandma on my mum's side, her and her partner actually spearheaded a group that ended up buying it an old church in the Isle of Wight, which is a tiny little island at the bottom of the UK.
Okay.
To buy a church and refit it as a theatre. It's still standing there now. It's called the Apollo Theatre.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that they met through doing theatre shows, like community theatre, amateur theatre shows. And then they did that their entire lives. And so, yeah, the theatre acting bug, I think, was definitely kind of passed down in from them, my grandma, and I still feel a very like strong connection at like to her and with her whenever I do things to do with live theater. I feel like it's like a closeness, you know, that we were able to share, and it's just such a lovely story. It's like incredible.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I can't believe that that happened. And I have always said like if I won the lottery that I would like put lots of money into the Apollo Theatre and like maybe try and, you know, because it's an old building now. It's constantly probably having problems with getting almost renovated or, you know, being going to be redeveloped into something else. But I'm very, very happy that they have a legacy. I think like a lot of people think about that, right? Like, what's my legacy of my life going to be? And their legacy is absolutely amazing. Incredible.
Well, legacy is such a weird concept to think about because like we're all so young, we have so much like life experience to, please, oh my god. But we just have so much to like look forward to, and it feels like it's a little scary to think about like leaving a legacy behind. Do you ever think about like what yours is?
I do, and then I have tried to stop thinking about that so much at the advice of my therapist. I mean, I've been on a journey in therapy for about the last year.
Okay.
Which has been incredible. And I feel so grateful that I was able to do that. And I know that it's something that not everyone is able to do, but I would recommend anyone that can have access to do it because it's very life changing. And early on, we talked, and I'm not going to disclose everything that we talked about in my therapy.
Yeah, yes, but... please give me a play-by-play. Thank you so much.
But we talked early on about, like, who is Jill?
Okay.
And I realized that I did see myself reflected in other people's eyes or expectations of me. And I think that that was something that, I don't know when I started doing it, but it became something that I have been doing for a very long time and was natural to me. So in terms of thinking about leaving a legacy, like, yeah, I see when I get, you know, when I do something that gets praise or the show gets an award or like things are going well with my business and like I see that like people are proud of me, like that gives me a sense of worth and achievement, which I think is natural and normal, but you don't want that to kind of take over, because then if those things aren't happening, who is actually left there when you're just sitting by yourself at home, like not really feeling particularly creative or particularly beautiful or lovable today? What's then left? And that's when you go kind of down a different and difficult road. So I think I really wanted to reassess what does it mean to leave a legacy. Sure, like I think it is something that our generation was kind of, we all want it. I feel like it's not an individual thing. I feel like everyone in our generation was kind of instilled with the idea of like, what are you going to leave behind in the planet apart from destruction that all humanity is doing? But I'm not concerned. I'm sure that I will. I'm not sure what it will be yet.
Okay.
I'm sure that I'm on the right path. Yeah, not being so hard on myself in terms of thinking about that stuff necessarily is part of my path at the moment. Do you think that you have a...
I think about this a lot, and it's like I do have like a big fear of like not leaving anything behind. But I mean, I'm glad that I've been able to share so many people's stories, and I feel like since I have something that is actually like out in the world to be like consumed, and people can return to, like, I think that's at least a little bit of something that I like. I've been able to like have, oh gosh, like over hundreds of people come in and share their stories. Like, I think that's pretty cool. But
yeah, it is. It is. And allowing other people space to put their voices out there is also, you know, that's a huge thing.
Well, it's also something you're really passionate about, which is like something that I'm sure we're going to get into, is actually like showcasing marginalized voices and actually like not shying away from like, not dark content, but like, what's the word? What would be the word for that? Like, prevalent, like very like in the now, like conversations to have.
Totally. Yeah.
Not controversial, but, uncomfortable. Uncomfortable, conversation.
Definitely.
Through art.
Yeah.
But we'll get there. Yeah. Something I really want to curious about, we were talking about like your journey and how you like, how you got to where you are now and your actual, we talked a little bit off our air about how you came to Canada. Do you think that this was like when you came here, that was like the right choice and you feel like you've grown, or do you kind of live in a what if land a little bit about it?
I don't at all. No, I don't. I think that it was definitely the right decision, and immediately things started, things that were happening in my life started to prove that immediately. A lot of kind of serendipitous things started happening for me. It's interesting because I don't want it to, I always worry, and again, my therapist would be like, Jill, choices, you make choices. It's just, choosing one thing means not choosing another thing, and that's okay. Like, that's the way life is. But I don't want it to me to seem like I left England and everything became great for me, and like, F everybody, like, back in England, because that's not the case. Of course, I deeply miss my family there and my amazing, amazing friends that I've had, you know, my whole life. But the momentum that came with that move, that energetic shift.
Right.
And also the new startness element of it. Like, there was zero expectation for me here. Because when I arrived, I was like, I might work in a coffee shop for 6 months and then go like, ding, I know what I want to do. Time to go back to England, right? I didn't know how long I was going to be here when I first came here. I still don't know how long I'm going to be here, honestly. I don't see myself leaving at all, but I'm also, I never make these like 5-year, 10-year plans either. And so I think it was more the momentum of making a change and taking a chance on nothing. Like, nothing and everything. Like, there was zero expectation when I came out here. I just was, you know, the first job that I got, I was pounding the streets of Broadway, handing into my resume to, like, any restaurant or whatever. And a car, like, pulled up in front of me, and I saw in the back, it was, like, acting, singing, dancing, like, teach your kids with Bright Stars. And there was, like, a telephone number, and I was, like, oh, I'm going to write down that telephone number. And then this woman got out the car, and she was, like, paying for her parking, and I was, like, no, I should just go ask her. Like, she obviously works for the company. I'm just gonna go and ask her and say, like, hey, what's up? So I did. And I was like, I'm a performer. I just moved to Canada. Like, I also teach children. Like, do you know anything about this company? And she was like, it's my company. My musical theater teacher is moving to LA in 2 weeks' time. Do you want to come and, like, have a chat with me? Like, and have coffee and come to one of my classes? And I was like, yes, I would love to do that. And she was like, great, send me your resume. And like that, and from that one moment where I was just like, oh no, I should, I'm just going to write down the telephone number. Like, making bold choices in life, like, is very seldom not rewarded. I always encourage, I'm always trying to encourage people to take, like, big leaps, especially if it feels scary. Like, it's probably because it's actually good.
Right.
So don't let that, like, humans are creatures of comfort. Yep. Like, to a massive extent. But I think it's, especially if you don't do it all the time. I'm not saying, like, make massive life fundamental choices every day. But, like, if you tend to be a creature and an opportunity comes up and you're like, I'm not sure, like, weigh out the pros and cons for sure, but, like, also just do it. Like, even if the cons are more.
Right. Did you always have that mantra, or was that something, like, you adopted throughout, growing up and throughout life, or is that just how you've always been?
I don't know. I think I've always been, a bit of an attention seeker. I was the youngest in my family. I think got that feeling of liking attention and wanting and needing attention, which is something that we're working on now with a therapist.
Okay, sure.
30 years later. But taking chances and risks, I can't really remember there being a, I think that when I moved out here at the time, I didn't see it as taking this monumental change or risk. I saw it as, oh, like, the balance has shifted now. Before, I always knew that I wanted to come out to Canada and live for an amount of time. I didn't know what that looked like, but I knew it was something that I wanted to do. But there was always more things keeping me in England. Like, it was like the weight was kind of down on that side. And then when I lost my job in London, and it was like the middle of December, and I wasn't gonna be able to pay my next month's rent, and I was going to be moving back to Newcastle, and then if I was moving back there, like, am I going to get another place in Newcastle? Like, what even do I want? What jobs am I going to apply for? Like, I was interviewing for admin jobs, so I was like, is that even what I want to be doing? So the shift came when it was like, there's nothing now really stopping me from doing this adventure time now.
Sure.
If it's a thing career-wise, I was like, if it's a break in my career and I want to go into, like, a quote-unquote real job, and people are like, oh, I see that there's 2 years missed in your CV here, and I'll be able to say, I went to Canada to explore another country and work there and get an experience somewhere else, and now I'm here, Mrs. Big Boss Lady Man, to whip your socks off with my impressive skills in this magnificent real job that you have for me. I think now I was like, oh yeah, I did that thing and that was brave and good. But I don't think I really thought about it at the time, because I didn't know it was going to be 8 years later on sitting doing a podcast about my, like, artist life, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, for real. And your dad is Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have family in Vancouver? Like, why Vancouver?
So my sister moved to Canada when I was in my early teens. She's 5 years older than me.
Okay.
And she moved out here to go to, like, she did a post-grad out here in Vancouver. And growing up, my dad was originally from Newfoundland, but he lives in Prince George. Okay. Or actually, he's in Haida Gwaii now, but he did live in Prince George all the time that we were growing up.
Okay.
So we would always come through Vancouver. So Vancouver was, like, always a stopping point. So it was, like, the first arrival point into Canada, which obviously as a kid was always, like, super exciting. Like, you've been on... You know, like, I started doing international travel when... You still had like the paper tickets with like the carbon copies,
okay,
and
yeah.
People were smoking on airplanes. You know, it was
right.
It was quite a wild time. Like there was no one else. Like you know, like air travel was still. It was like it was a crazy, like privilege moment for
right.
me. Like as a 5 year old, like doing international travel on my own with like my older brother and sister. Right, like that's it was wild. So, I forget how we got onto this. What was
it? Family, talking about family.
Family, yeah. So, no, we were talking about Vancouver.
Yeah, like why Vancouver
yeah,
do you
yeah.
have family here, yeah.
So, the long and short of it is I always felt an affinity with Vancouver. Just the time that I spent here, we would sometimes vacation here. Then my sister was living here and I came to live with her for 4 months when I was on my, or a couple of months when I was on my gap year. So that's the year when you graduate high school before you go to university. I
okay.
had a year off and I came to stay with her. But actually when I moved here, Ginger was living in Toronto, my sister.
Okay.
And she was like, Jilly, you should come to Toronto because the theater scene is massive, which is not a lie. Like Toronto as a actor would probably have been like a smarter choice. And also Ginger was there and I, you know, also would be amazing and wanted to be close to my sister. But I was like, no, I'm gonna go to Vancouver. I just felt it. There was something that I wanted to be here. And then it was crazy because 6 months after that, my brother who had previously been living in Hong Kong and then Rome, got a job opportunity in Vancouver.
Okay.
Like he got off, like had a few interviews, but one of them was in Vancouver. And he got that job. So he ended up moving here 6 months after I moved.
Okay.
And then 6 months after that, my sister and her partner at the time, now husband, they moved back to Vancouver.
Okay.
So now I have, my nuclear family is also super complicated, but I have, two other brothers in England, stepbrothers. But like, it was crazy having the three of us, like me, my brother Jack, hilarious, Jack and Jill, me and my brother and my sister Ginger, all being in one place again. Because we hadn't lived in the same city since we were kids,
no.
like since Ginger first went off to university, right? So, and now they both have families, which is incredible. Yeah, so I have those here. My dad and my stepmom were living in Prince George, and my dad comes to Vancouver fairly often. He's a doctor, and he also is like quite high up in kind of Northern Health, so he does conferences and things like
okay.
that. And also, my dad and my stepmom had twin girls, daughters.
Okay.
So they're 10 years younger than me. They also have, you know, I have been close in Vancouver. My younger sister Penny is actually coming back to UBC very shortly. My other sister Fiona is out at she's out on the east studying out there. And then in Vancouver itself, when I first arrived, I stayed with my cousin in Langley. I have a cousin called Kim who lives out in Langley. And when I first moved here, I was like, I'll go stay with Kim and I'll just commute to Vancouver. It's going to be easy. Like, I came from London before
right.
this. Like,
right, sure.
It looks really close. Like, it can't be that bad. Yeah, no. I realized very quickly that that wasn't going to be the case. And when I first moved here, I also had a dear aunt. My aunt Joss also lived in town. Really close to here, actually.
Okay.
I'm not going to disclose your address. But she lived right by VGH.
Okay.
So when I first... The first job that I got here was actually, after teaching, was Starbucks. Right, the one that was right at Broadway City Hall. So
oh, yeah.
sometimes when I was doing the like 6 a.m. starts, whatever, I would stay with my Aunt Joss and then just walk down in the morning. So it wasn't a complete jump into the deep. No, there were
a lot of people around here.
Yeah, you're like, chill out. You just take back everything that you just said before.
Wow.
I was so brave.
No, yeah, you did have a lot of people. Do you see family very regularly or...
I see my brother and his wife and my little niece, Bria. At the moment, I'm seeing them at least once a week because I'm providing childcare for Bria for one day, which is amazing. She's the most rambunctious, delightful two-year-old. It's incredible. And then, obviously, with COVID, there was a bit more separation space. But I do also see, my sister and her kids, two kids, I see them usually, like, on average, probably once a week or every other week. But it's so incredible having them close. And the kids are incredible. It's being super auntie is like one of the best roles in life that I have.
Totally. With COVID, did you have to go through like a withdrawal from life? Like, how was your COVID journey? I know it's like a dumb question to ask, but in terms of like your heart and like taking care of yourself through the like crazy last year and a half, and like, I don't know, 98% of us all lost our jobs and our gigs and stuff like that, you know? Yeah. So like where were you at throughout that whole process?
I went to therapy. It was interesting to me that it became very apparent that I kept myself very busy to avoid some deeper things that were going on for me. And what happened was when COVID hit and I could no longer be busy, all of those things were like, have you got time to think about us now? Because we're here. That was really important for me to be able to start that journey, which I'm still on now. And I think like everyone, it was kind of fits and or like peaks and valleys, fits and spurts. What's that? I don't know what that phrase is, but peaks and valleys. And I certainly was very grateful for the support that was available from the government, the federal support that became available, the support for like housing benefits and stuff here in BC. Like I'm very, very grateful that we were able to have that. Because you look at the things and, you know, situations in other countries where it really, really was not like that. Towards the end of last year, I got really bored of it. I was like, right, nothing's happening. So I'm going to start I'm going to start my own momentum. Like, theater isn't starting it, but like, I'm going to start doing something. Like, I'm going to like, and it was like a car spinning in mud. It was like, I was putting in like so much energy, but like nothing still was happening. And it was disingenuous. Like, it wasn't really true. I didn't feel momentum. I was just a coping mechanism of like trying to just do the stuff so that it seemed like everything was okay, because if I'm not doing the stuff, then like things are not okay. With the passing of 2020, I'm just looking, there's this sign behind you which says Happy New Year, fuck 2020. I'm like, it kind of felt like that. It kind of felt like, and okay, 2020 is a write-off, let's just get it done out of the way and then let's start again. Although it's interesting now being midway through 2021 and being like, 2021 is just kind of like a hangover of 2020. It's not as bad, but no. Like it's not really going to be all that different until 2022, I don't think. But at the start of this year, I think a lot of people in a new year get like a renewed sense of like hope and things upcoming. And we were getting lots of great news about, you know, like the vaccinations and things, which was bolstering. And yeah, I think that that's when I genuinely started to feel like I wanted to move again. I feel like 2020 was a bit of hermiting, enforced, and also like actual like emotionally and, you know, just very much like paring down. And 2021 feels like the seed has started to like sprout. And things are starting to go towards the sun because there's sun again.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually like the way you said that. That's really pretty, actually.
Thanks.
I'm curious about your relationship with being proud of yourself, because you've done a lot of like incredible things in terms of art. I really liked a lot of the stuff you've done. Like I'm a fan of yours. Like I really appreciate the art you put out in the world.
Thanks.
And I really like it. Like I think it's really relevant and elegant, and you just have a really like smart way of creating content and there, but then you're also like working really hard at yourself, and you talked about this therapy journey, which therapy is really new to me. Like, I've talked a lot about how I think everyone should be doing therapy, but like I'm like, oh, but like I'm fine, like everyone else, like, really good for everyone, but like I'm good, I'm totally good. And like just recently I'm starting that journey for myself. And I'm curious really, really like bare bones. We're just starting to interview people, but that's for another day.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about if, like, I'm proud of you of all the stuff you've done. Where are you with your, like, self-worth and self-accomplishment and being proud of yourself? Because you should be.
Thanks. Thank you. I'm the most proud, I think, of the benefit, like, the journey milestones that I've seen with myself within the last year of therapy. Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of work. It's a very different kind of work and is really hard. And I think that a few times also in the last year, I was getting down on myself because I was like, you're not working, like you're lazy, like what are you, you're on benefits, like what are you doing, like you can work, like you're being, and then I thought about all of the work that I was doing internally, and it was quite overwhelming, and it still is ongoing. There's, you know, there's times that I'm like, oh, I think I'm good now. I think I'm done. And then like 2 weeks later, I'm like that, like in a mess. Like, I am, it's hard for me, right? Like I find it, on one hand, I'm like, give me all the praise and all the love.
Yeah, totally.
And everything. And like, tell me that the show is great. And like, tell me this and tell me that I'm like, an artist that's going to change the world, like tell me that, I love it. And then on the other hand, I'm like, I cannot take a compliment, like no, like thank you, but like so it's tricky for me. I'm learning to be proud of myself in a genuine way that don't stop saying that stuff, because I do love it. But I feel like where I get proud of myself is where I feel like the work that I'm doing is bigger than myself. Mm. And maybe that goes back to the thing about acting. For me, in acting roles, it's more like, get me on stage and give me the praise, and like people are looking at me and now you applaud. Whereas the work that I'm creating is like, this is developing something that's bigger than me. It has, sure. You know,
yeah.
And it's not necessarily about that, the praise and stuff, actually. Like when we were first starting to do Hysteria, I had no idea like how the magnitude of what was going to become from it. Like, I think that was the last time I was here, we were talking about, because I was talking about devising, and I was like, the show that we're doing is devising. And, I was like, we're doing a fringe show about kind of about the Me Too movement. And I was like, it's going to be a fringe show. It's whatever. It's like a flash in the pan. And then going through the process of creating it, and then after we did it, it was like, it's definitely not. Like, there's definitely more here. This needs to go further. And in terms of legacy, I really hope Hysteria will continue and have a life of its own, kind of beyond also what we've done with it, you know, and we're trying to think about ways that we can, like, expand it. And I love the idea of there being a script that, you know, people can then take and be produced in other countries. And it would be an entirely different show because of the vignettes, which are primarily, like, come from the individuals that are performing in the show, like, their own experiences. So I'm very proud of myself. I'm so rambly. It's because I haven't spoken to anyone in, like, such a long time. Yeah. I feel good about what I'm doing. My life.
Well, that's the thing. You don't actually have to have an answer at all.
Yeah.
Like, some days you are and some days you are. Like, it just depends on the day. And I'm very much the same way. And in terms of, like, your... not self-worth, but, like, your self-appreciation about yourself and self-love. Like, are you currently on, like, a journey of that as well?
Yeah, definitely. I am definitely on a journey of self-worth and self-love. And I think, like, it's a tricky thing to, like, kind of talk about and get into because I grew up with a lot of love. Like, I grew up in a very loving family, dual family, actually. You know, I have, like, amazing siblings and, you know, like, very, very, very supportive parents. I'm very lucky and very grateful for that. My situation was, it was also, like, it was an unusual family situation, and I think, like, you don't know until later on, like, how things are affected, like, children just kind of go with it, and you roll, and an interesting thing as well to explore is, like, you know, you find your role within the family, and what that looks like, and then it's important to know that everyone is a human constantly developing, changing, learning, becoming different people or different versions of themselves all the time, right? So, I am in a very good place with myself right now.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Kind of, like, jumping off of that point, in terms of, like, this is something that I'm struggling with, is, like, forgiveness at the end of the day if you didn't, like, achieve something, or you don't, like, if you didn't freaking go to the gym when you said you were going to, and, like, do you, like, oh, God, they called it, when I studied at school, like, one of the professors called it, like, forgiveness spray, and you just, like, spray it over and you, like, let it go. Do you find that you struggle with, like, letting things go and, like, forgiving yourself and, like, being okay with not achieving something, like, because you've achieved so much, and, like, I'm curious about speed, like, I don't know, failures is something that a lot of people don't like to talk about.
Yeah.
Where, like, I guess that's not really a question, just what are your thoughts about your things when things don't exactly work out the way you want to, and, like, how do you tackle that? What do you do to let go of that? Because I don't know at all.
Yeah. And I mean, it happens a lot, and I think as artists, like, it's gonna continually happen also forever. Yeah. And if you're a people pleaser and you're also trying to create work, it's also very difficult because you're not always gonna please people, and you shouldn't always try and please people either. But that's, like, a disconnect. I know that's a disconnect for me. Like, I'm craving that, like, we like this and you did good, versus the, like, this is what I, you know, this is what I care about, this want to put out into the world. There isn't really an answer. Therapy certainly helps, like, for sure. Because, you know, I think just also remembering that, like, everyone is just making it up as they go along. Everyone is. Mm-hmm. Like, the smartest, highest up people in any job or any, you know, like, influencer role, right? Like, everyone is just making it up and gathering bits of information from other people and learning. And we spoke earlier, like, when we were having a chat before we came on, but about, like, learning and how much that makes a difference, and just continually trying to, just learn more to be able to put into things. But, like, there are times that I mean, I still get horrifically upset when things don't work out. I'm a very emotional being. I'm very emotionally led. And I often attribute more significance to things than there actually are as well.
Yeah.
So also having just a great, close, core group of friends, family, people that know you that are able to like lift you up, I think is so incredibly important. I'm so very lucky with the family and friends I have. That's really helpful to have other people come in to take you off your crying fit like a toddler, like having a tantrum. It's funny, I often think, like, I wonder if people like see it like that, like when I'm really upset about something and they're like, oh, Jill, come on Jill, is it that bad, come on. And I think also sometimes looking at yourself like a child, right, like if you've had a day and you've tried your best but you still haven't done something right, like look at like little Ryan and imagine that it was him and like you did good, you did your best, like that's it. It sounds like a, you know, like something that you'd see scribble on a inspirational poster.
Yeah, right.
But it's true, like if you did your best, like that's it. And if your best was laying in bed all day, that's enough, like that's fine.
Yeah.
And if you didn't achieve that thing that you wanted to achieve, like that sucks. It sucks, and you definitely should feel that emotion because it's real. But it's not, there will be other days and there will be other opportunities. And the whole thing of like one door closing and another one opening, like it is so true, but it's not even like that. It's like a multiverse of doors. There are so many, there are doors that you don't even know exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or doors that you're like, I don't want that one. And then later you're like, huh, I remember that door. Maybe I'll go try it now. Oh, it's open. Great, let's go check it out.
Yeah. Fair, yeah, that's fair. In terms of like kind of creating more opportunities for you, are you planning to do more things with the collective, or are you?
Yeah. We are in swing mode. We're definitely, we have plans for the year. I'm currently writing a new show.
Okay, fine.
Which I'm really excited about. And I think it's going to be great. I think it's in the same, it's kind of in the same universe as Hysteria, but the focus is different this time. It's still a lot about technology, a lot about how we relate to each other online, like social media as well, but also about just interpersonal connections and how we. The fact that like there's 1,000 different versions of Ryan from 1,000 different people. Like you are a different person from depending on who is seeing you.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So taking that like kind of perception, which again, it's interesting and probably good for me as well at this time to, you know, to be on this journey because writing that kind of stuff does also start to like mess. I think that, you know, at the beginning of last year I was like, oh, I've got this great idea for a show, it was right at the start of the pandemic and it was like, oh, it's gonna be about like isolation, but like this person has become like completely isolated and like they're not allowed to see anybody and the only way they can communicate with people is online, and I was like, this is so good, it's so dystopian. And then like 2020 actually started unfolding and I was like, I can't write this show. Like, I can't be living through this. And also, at the moment, you know, we're doing, it's going to be workshopped and we're going to do some development around it this year. But, like, we're not going to present it this year. Other than, we're going to do a reading, like a presentational reading. But, like, it's not time. It's too close right now. Still.
Yeah.
So that's upcoming. But like, I'm very excited to be writing. I love it. And then we're actually going to be producing a documentary.
Oh, cool. That's not what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah, about hysteria. Which will include, like, we're going to film the show, so there'll be clips of the show within the documentary, and then it will also be, like, interviews and discussions around the show itself, the subject matter. We're working with a few new, like, collaborators on it. It's really exciting. I'm very, very excited.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
Wow, I just got, like, 15,000 questions. Okay, I'm going to ask my question first, and then I will...
There's a lot of details that still aren't hashed out yet as well, though. I should totally mention that.
Yeah. I'm curious of how you chose the name. I'm always curious about that. I guess I'm going to take that back. I don't know. How did you create the collective? I don't think we actually discussed the last time you were here, because it was a very different version of the show now. Like, I'm much more... not interested about, like, roles or anything like that.
Right.
I'm more interested about, like, your heart and how, like, that affects everything.
Right.
But I'm curious how... Why? Why did you create it?
Yeah.
Why did you pick the name? Why the show? Like, was the show because of the thing? Was the production company after the show? Like, what was the timeline?
Okay.
That's what I'm curious about. And then I want to dive into that, the other things you were just talking about.
Cool. So, the Me Too movement... was happening, and when that all first started happening, I didn't listen to my previous podcast, but maybe you haven't either, but like when that first started happening, it was very actually really like affronting for me. I actually really didn't like it, because I'd done a really nice job of just like being like, this never happened. So don't talk about it,
right?
Because now you're bringing it up for me, and like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it. But it became clear that, like, right, well, this is the way that everything came to light is by, and it's, I think other people have spoken about this, but like, it seems a shame that a lot of times people have to like display actual trauma, in order for things to change or for things to get done. Right. Like you see it now, even with the residential schools, right?
Right.
Oh, well, now let's really start nailing in on the, you know, like, the things around this. Well, you know, like, a lot of people knew. Now it's in the headlines. You can no longer avoid it, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd applied to Fringe, because, like, I love Fringe. Fringe is, like, my, like, favorite time of the year. It's, like, always been something that I'm interested in. And I was like, I'm just going to apply for the lottery, like, just to see. And then I got the place in the Fringe.
I remember when on Twitter it said your name, and I was like,
yeah. And I was like, right, well, I have to make this show.
I have to. I'm in the Fringe now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it has to be about me too. Like, it has to be about this. Because that's why I got it. That's like the universe is where, I don't know. Like, that's the calling. That's why I'm here. So I started to create the story, and had, you know, I'd written a few scenes mainly about this, like the kind of the lead character in the show, Joe. It's just funny that she's called Joe, because like I'd essentially written her kind of, she was me, and like at the time that I was writing it, I was like imagining it. And imagining myself in that role. And then I remember Leia, when the director came in, she was like, we need to think of it another name. And also, like, how she's different than you. Which was a fun experience to go through. But I'd written and kind of had a skeleton around this main... how this main storyline would play out with the app, the consent app, and what happens with Joe. But then I had wanted to do a devised piece. I'd done a devised piece before, which I remember I did speak about on the last podcast, called Still the Kettle Sings, which was about like creating, like collecting stories and then like developing from that. So it really was the first group of women that we did it. Lauren Martin and Ariel Mazzo-Volanda, Issa Sanchez, and Kimberly Ho. We then devised the show. So we were bringing in ideas, kind of workshopping around them, and then like creating scenes from that. People like you know, like, Lauren would go home and, like, write this scene, or Ariel would develop around this idea, and then we would come back together. So the food show was very much a collaborative effort of us all coming together. And then after Fringe, when I was like, this isn't, I don't feel like this is the end of this. And also I really liked producing a show and like doing that, and I wanted to go after that. That's when Direct Theatre Collective was formed. And the first thing was me approaching everyone that was in that cast and being like, I want to now develop a theatre company. I'm opening it up if people want to join me on the, like, on the board of directors. To now take this forward. And the name, Direct, was about, like, it being, like, I think, as you said, like, kind of very topical, like, kind of blunt, and discussing things in a very, like, real and open way. But also because my initial idea as well with the company had been that, like, it's also self and interdirected. You don't necessarily need an outside director. We have used directors for both of the shows. I'm not saying directors are redundant, but I also think, like, a lot of good stuff comes from cast when you have, like, a good, strong ensemble cast. So Direct Theatre, it's pretty self-explanatory, and Collective, again, because of that, like, group mentality, mm-hmm. like, people coming together, you know, like, this person also has done, like, stuff to do with, I don't know, like, rigging up a projection, so they're gonna help with that, and this person has done, like, PR, so they're gonna be the ones that, like, send out the press release, so whatever, like, it's about, like, the true, like, communal pitching together to make something happen.
Yeah,
so then we became a not-for-profit that year. I think December of 2018, we registered a not-for-profit. And then the year after 2019, that's right, we put on a Hysteria 2.0. Lauren and I had done some, like, work, like, writer's lab, writer's lounge, I don't know, working together on developing the script more. And then because we had a new ensemble for the next show, we also came up with new vignettes that were going to go in the show. And it was just, it was, I think we saw it as being not as fringy. The Fringe show was very raw in some ways, in a better way. But the show that we developed the next year was more of a theatre show, and I don't know if some of the rawness, yeah. I can't think of a better word. Some of the rawness was kind of pared down. We didn't want to take anything away from How Strong Are We, and I don't think that we did. But it was a very different show, and yeah, we'll see with the one that we're going to be filming for the documentary. We'll see if we know that we can't get one of our cast members back because Julia moved to Australia. Julia. So it is going to be a different cast, at least for one cast member. We're still waiting on finding out for the other ensemble member. So it will be a different show again. But that's kind of beautiful in its own way. It kind of sticks with the, you know, exactly what I was talking about like theatre being a live, living being that should change every time and does change every time.
So when you did 2.0,
mm-hmm.
was it completely different show, like new auditions, like new submissions, or was it like the people who were in the first inauguration of it?
Only Issa and I were from the original cast.
Okay, was that in
2.0.
Was that like a decision you made to kind of like keep the flow of new artists kind of coming in throughout the project, or?
No, we did offer it to the original ensemble first, and there was some scheduling things, and some people
like decided that they
didn't want to come back, Yeah, we actually, Lauren and Ariel, who were in the original cast, actually did come back on as directors.
Oh, fun.
So that that was really, yeah, that it was strong. You know, like, it was interesting for sure, having two directors, but also great to have, to people that had been involved in the original process to kind of also understand how the process works. And yeah, with more of an inherent invested interest and knowledge of the show from the first time around. And then, yeah, our three new people who are just absolutely incredible. Florence Raya, who's just an insane talent. Kapila Rachel, who's amazing and also a wonderful person. And I'm so glad that she came into my life and came into this project. She's a bomb. And then Julia, who's, again, just incredible. And now she's moved to Australia. And I'm so jealous of Australia because they have her now. She was supposed to come back, but it doesn't seem like you're coming back, Julia. so, yeah. And just an incredible experience to work with all of those. And of course, like, Issa, who's not only, like, she's on the board of director, but, like, Issa's, like, my rock. Like, we met through the first iteration of Hysteria, but, like, she's, like, one of the most important people in my life. Like, she's so my partner in so many things in life. She's incredible. So, yeah, it was great to have her back as well, and yeah, and be working all together and creating all of this stuff. Yeah.
Did you find that it was hard to kind of break into the theater scene, not in terms of, like, career role wise but actually, like, breaking into, like, friendships and creating, like, genuine friendships? Or was it, like, easy for you, because you're a very personal person?
Thank you. I like to think so.
Well, was it something that you had to think about, or was it just easy to make friends,
like, when I first moved here?
Yeah.
Oh, like, no. Like, it was very easy to make show friends.
Yeah, sure.
Actually, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because three of my closest friends, who are still my closest friends now, I met in the first show that I did here in Vancouver. Russell Cripps, Jenna Gruber, and oh my god, my mind! Mary Littlejohn. I met those guys doing The Frogs, which was an Applause show.
Oh.
Yeah, and it was a crazy show. Like, there was so much so much going on. Scott won't mind me saying that, because he even admits it himself. But, like, there was a lot going on with that show. But, like, we met during that show, and we are, like, still so incredibly close now. But what I found generally about, like, being in Vancouver, like, it's not only Vancouver. It's the combination of Vancouver being flaky and also making really close show friends that are like your best friends, and then you don't see them for a week and it's like, oh, who are you? So it took a while to really forge what I found to be the lasting connections, but a lot of them came through theater, for sure. I'm not friends still with anyone from my Starbucks days, except for Steph Davis, because we actually worked at the same Starbucks for a few months.
Hilarious.
Amazing. It's actually the first, the way that I met her first was, like, on shift in Starbucks.
That's hilarious.
She was like, I'm also a performer. And I was like, amazing. I had no idea. I was like, oh, you're a performer? Oh, cool. And then I, like, saw her perform for the first time, and I was like,
oh, you're a performer. Oh, yeah. I see. I see. That's fucking funny. Mm-hmm. So going forward, are you looking forward to things opening up back up again? Or, like, what is where your anxiety levels right now about it?
I'm excited that it's happening. I think a lot of people feel anxious. Like, we've been told the subliminal and actual messaging that's been coming to us over the last year has been, be fundamentally afraid of humans, other human people,
right,
that
yeah,
you see, like, totally, stay away from them. So I'm aware of that, but it's happening so gradually now. Like, even this, like, you know, like, oh, you're going to, like, a house with, like, one other person, okay, and now, like, you're going to like, go to a restaurant and, like, not be so far away from other people, or things are, like, slowly starting to happen, so that it's not I don't feel overwhelmed by the way that things are moving. I don't, at least not yet. And I remember a couple of months ago, like, right when it started getting nice for the first time, like, kind of May, when it starts to, like, you know, you start to get a little bit of summer vibes. And I remember cycling along the seawall and seeing, like, appropriate groups of people together outside, but just people, like, sitting outside and, like, talking and, like, just eating food or relaxing or drinking or, you know, and I, and it felt like a thaw. Like, it felt like humanity was, like,
yeah,
thawing. And it was so, like, wonderful to see. I didn't think, like, oh, no, like, people are together. I was like, oh, my God. Yes.
It's starting.
It's starting. Yeah. And look at, and people are smiling. You can see people's faces because they're not wearing masks. And, like, it just, I'm feeling very, I'm feeling hopeful, apart from the fact that the earth is on fire.
Like, we don't think about that yet.
Yeah. No. Yeah, the moon wobbled. I don't know if you heard about that. The moon has wobbled, and we're in 2030. We're gonna have higher high tides and lower low tides than ever. So by my house in Richmond, let's not think about that. That's like moon something wobble? for 10 years. Yeah, on its axis.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter, right? Science doesn't exist anyway. No one believes science anymore. Are you a sheep?
I blame the freaking billionaires going into space. They probably made the moon wobble.
Oh, yeah. Fuck them. Fuck you.
Wild.
Fuck you. Yeah.
I feel like I could talk to you forever. I can't believe it's over. I can't believe we've reached the hour. This is wild.
I know.
I just have to say, I really appreciate you in as a person. I feel like I learned something from you. I feel like you're very open and willing to kind of take other people's auras on. And I feel like you're a sponge, and you really just like sit and open arms, like accept everyone around you. And then I love that about you. Thank you. Want to take a little bit of Jill away from away with me when I'm feeling down, because I feel like you're just so, and I said this the very first time, like, the first time I saw you perform, I was like, oh, no, like, you're a ray of light, like, you're just, like, a light person, and I love that about you.
Thank you.
I could feel like I talked to you forever, so please come back to me, and be on the show always, just be, like, a regular guest.
Amazing, I would love that.
How can people follow all your things? You have things coming down the pike. Where can people find you?
Yes, good. Thank you. Yes, you can follow me on all of the things. I am on Jill Raymond. I'm on JillRaymond.com. That's my website. I'm also back on Facebook as Jill Raymond. I had a pseudonym for a while, but then I was like,
oh, fancy.
Fuck that, I'm going to just be me. So I'm back on Facebook as Jill Raymond. I have a page. If I don't want to be your friend, you can just follow my page. If I want to be your friend, then you can friend request me. I'll let you make that decision as to which of those camps you're in. I'm on Instagram, LoveJRay. I'm on TikTok doing all kinds of stupid cheers.
Hey, before we leave, we have to talk about your amazing TikTok career. Your TikToks are hilarious.
Aww,
I messaged you about like so many of them. They make me giggle so much.
I enjoy TikTok because it's so not, it's very not performative, and that sounds ridiculous because it is performing all the time, but like it's very genuine performance. Like so much of it is like that thing where it reminds me of like the Boom Boom song where he's like, you're holding the camera like 2 inches from your face, because a lot of mine, they're literally so, it's, that's whatever, I guess my style, but whatever, it's fun. If you want to see some stupid videos, sure, go there. Again, that's Love J Ray. Anything else you can get like from the website. Direct Theatre Collective is Direct Theatre Co on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. Twitter is a bit of a whatever. But that's how you can get me, or call me on the phone. My number is, no, I'm just kidding. But you know, Just
they'll find you.
They'll find me.
We'll link everything
or
below.
They won't.
Or they
might not want to. They might be like, "What a okay, Jill, bye."
I was out of town for the Fringe Run when it was the first iteration of it, but the second Hysteria was absolutely incredible. I'm so excited that you're going to be creating more work on it. I think, like I said before, the content that you create is very like needed. Like, you're just a very needed person. And I want you to hear that. Like, I just, like, I really appreciate the things that you bring into the world. And I feel like I'm excited to consume. I'm excited to consume your energy.
Thank you, Ryan.
Which is why I'm so stoked that you're here.
I'm so stoked to be here. And thank you so much for having me. And I'm so excited to be the first one.
Yeah.
First one back.
Out of the people, this is my very first in-person interview.
Woo-hoo!
I'm glad that it's you. Okay, I'm going to sign off, but say bye to everyone.
Bye, everyone.
And that is all for this episode, everyone. Thank you so much for Jill for coming back and being on our show. And we will see you next week for another Broad What episode.